up? Welcome to the OK Beats Podcast, episode 12. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye. Joining me this week is a very special guest, Raj Former. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did. Awesome. Thank you for saying it right. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. I assume because your name is Roger, correct?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. You're using... See,
I'm using logic.
This is... Yes, exactly. Greg Miller.
Wait, he called you Rock Former, I'm guessing?
Yes, multiple times.
Oh, man. Yeah. Let's start out. Well, first of all, where might people know you from? Because you're known, which I didn't realize you're known until I knew you. And then I was like, oh, this guy's kind of known. Where might people know you from?
So I guess so. Greg Miller mentioned me like a few times. But I make a YouTube video. I make one YouTube video, singular. That's the only thing I do. No, but I have a YouTube channel where I specialize in kind of a podcast that I've been uploading recently. Bonus Points. I think we're episode 77 now or something like that, and which is a great podcast. We've been doing it for over a year. I love it so much. My co-host, Caleb Sethamel, like the greatest person ever, lives in Arizona, has a perfect life, you know, the opposite of me. And then I have a series where I do video essays, and they're my favorite thing that I ever do. You might have seen the one with Arkham Origins, and you know I've won a Kanye West and blowing up recently for some reason. Like got 5,000
views. It's because
views
that one is really good. I watched it earlier today.
Thank you.
And I was like, first of all, I didn't know you had a video on Kanye West. I've known you for this long, and I didn't know you had a video on Kanye West, which is crazy.
Really?
Because Kanye West, like, I think is Kanye West your favorite rapper? Because he's my favorite rapper.
Kendrick's my favorite rapper, but he's Kanye second. Yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm like. I've said this multiple times on this podcast and probably on other people's podcasts, but I'm Kanye West's second biggest fan, first being Kanye West. And so, like, I'm very big on Kanye. And I watched that video. I was like, that was a really good breakdown. And also, sometime after watching that video, which was earlier today, I figured out that you're in high school, correct?
Yeah, I am.
That blows my mind. How is that possible?
Really? I don't know. the way that I explain it, people are like, how are you doing this when you're so young? And I'm like, well, let me tell you, it's because the internet exists, and it's very easy to figure out what you want to do if you just Google it for 3 seconds. Like, when I was a kid, I was just bored. I was like, I want to do something. And then I was like, oh, Greg Miller and IGN exist. So, I mean, that's how I'm doing this early, and I have no life, so I just kind of sit in front of a computer and learn a skill. So,
dude, that's amazing. Like, I wish I was like that in high school. Because in high school, I was like, well, I could do stuff, but yeah, I'm just not gonna do stuff. I'm just gonna sit here and play Shadow of Colossus, which was probably a good decision to play Shadow of Colossus, but like also not to do the stuff that I kind of wanted to do. And also the stuff I wanted to do was kind of whack. I wanted to become a rapper when I was in high school, just like every other black high schooler. But you live, you learn.
I mean, honestly, like, it's probably better for you now because you don't have, like, for me, at least, I have to, like, I'm not happy unless I'm, like, making 15,000 things and I'm very successful every 3 seconds, and that's, so that means I'm never happy. So maybe you picked the right decision to do, chill out in high school for a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, maybe I should have.
You're actually way ahead of the curve because your video editing skills, like, you edit your stuff yourself, right?
Yes.
And your stuff is, like, phenomenal, like, phenomenally edited.
Thank you.
And I have no idea how you do it. And so I'm going to ask you after this podcast, like, about your video editing software and stuff, because I'm actually doing a show similar to the Raj Former show called Wired.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of it.
Yeah, and, like, even one of the episodes, because I saw your Grand Theft Auto episode, and that kind of inspired a little bit of my San Andreas episode, so you know. But, yeah, like, I'm doing something it's similar to your show, actually. I originally was inspired by Daniel Dwyer's The Point, which is a phenomenal series. Which is, I guess, is like all of these shows are kind of in the same kind of realm of delving into game design and kind of breaking things down and kind of talking about things that aren't on the surface level, but like kind of a layer deeper, and taking a good look at how we play our games, how creators create their games, and how we can kind of make them better. Or how we can just look at them deeper. And so, yeah, man, I appreciate the stuff you do. You do a really good job. And not even just for your age, like, for in general, because before I realized you're in high school, I was still like, man, this guy is doing a great job with his stuff.
Thank you so much.
But the fact that you're in high school even pushes a limit further of, like, oh, man, I suck. So, like...
No, you don't.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's the nicest thing, though, because, like, I was telling you before, like, everyone, like, always comes like, you're in high school, oh my god, like, I feel like this is the first time where I've ever met someone that's like, oh, your shit is really good, oh, also you're in high school. Yeah. This is the first time. Like, and I really appreciate that. Thank you so much, man.
Oh yeah, dude. It's for real. And so for those listening, remember that OK Beast is a brand dedicated to games, culture, and looking at how games fit within our culture. The OK Beast podcast is a gaming-centric show where a couple of friends come together and talk about what's going on in our world. If you like that, subscribe to us on your podcast service of choice, visit okbeast.com, and follow at okbeastnow on Twitter. Ian's not here because I assume that he's sleeping, and he'll hear my rage later. I'll DM him on Twitter, yeah, since I don't really call him and stuff. But yeah, he'll hear my rage. He's in Japan, and so I can't really get too mad at him because but once again, like, it's 9 a.m. in Japan, and so, like, it's not like he's waking up at 5 a.m. or anything like that. It's a reasonable time, I assume, unless it's the norm in Japan to get up at, like, 11 a.m., which it could be. I don't know. but Ian's probably listening to this, and if he is, Ian, what the heck? And mm-hmm. if he's not listening to this, what the heck? but make sure, also, if you're listening, to rate us on iTunes. We will read every single rating you give us on iTunes. So far, we are sitting at 0 ratings. Either that, or people have just been rating us 0. I'm not sure which. But either way, rate us on iTunes. Let us know what you think. Even if you think we suck, please, still, rate us on iTunes. Hopefully you don't suck, though. Hopefully you understand that, like, this is episode 12, and things are still getting kind of, like, put together and whatnot. Make sure to check us out on YouTube. YouTube.com/ a bunch of letters and numbers, because we're not at 100 subscribers yet, and so we can't really choose our URL. So, but OK Beast, look us up on YouTube. You'll find us because our logo is there. And like we said before, Raj Former, they can find you on YouTube. Where?
YouTube.com/ Raj Former, RajFormer.com, all that jazz. Yeah.
Awesome.
Got that brand.
Nice. Yeah, branding. I love branding.
Branding's awesome.
So let's get to what we've been up to this week. I bought an Xbox One last week because Target had a price error, and I was able to get it cheap. And I talked about it a little bit last week because I had just gotten it in the mail right before we recorded the podcast, and so I didn't get to open it up and play it and stuff.
I was trying to do the same thing. You got the Target. You got it from Target.com, right?
Yeah, I got it from Target.com. And
you got it sent to you?
Yeah, it got sent to me. Did yours not?
They didn't delay it?
Nope.
What?
Yeah, I got an Xbox One. I got a 1 terabyte Xbox One bundle for $200, including tax.
That's some.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes me so
and
angry.
So I got. You tried and you failed?
Yes, I did. I tried to, because, like, so by the time I tried to do it, like, it was an hour or so after Mario 64 tweeted it all out. And I think what was the game over? I think it was a Mirror's Edge Catalyst bundle that was, like, really high price. Yeah. So you can, like, take a ton of money off it, was gone. So the closest I could do was the Overwatch bundles. I think it was Overwatch. Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha.
So that's the closest thing I can do. So I put it on and I deleted everything. And I was able to get the older Xbox One with Gears of War Ultimate Edition bundle. And I could take that off, and it was, like 160 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they emailed me like a week later, and they're like, whatever later, they're like, your thing is, I didn't have been delayed. To confirm your delay, go to the order details and press okay.
Wow.
And it was like a week delay, and I was like, okay, that's fine. I pressed the order details, not found ever.
Wow. Dude, so that's like, crazy.
Okay, I guess they canceled it. Bye.
I got mine early, which is the craziest part. I wasn't supposed to get it till Monday, and I got mine like 4 days later, and I was like, oh, sweet, an Xbox One. Yeah, I did it with, I ordered it with, like, I was like 4 hours late also, which,
really?
Yeah, I was like 4 hours late, so I got it with the, I think it was like a Doom pre-order or something, or not Doom, Gears 4 pre-order, and I think I removed that, like the Ultimate Edition or whatever it's called, whatever the bundle or the exclusive thing is where you pay more money. But I ordered that, took it out, and it was still like $200. It was $199 at the end, but that's still a great price for 1 terabyte and Rare Replay, Gears Remastered, and Ori and the Blind Forest. And so also, on top of that, later in the week, I got Forza Horizon 3 because of another price error. And so I got that for $20.
I saw a tweet.
Yeah, that was listed for $20 on Target. And so I was like, sweet, I'll pick that up. And yeah, I was one of the people that got it. And so it's been a great week for me in Target. Like, I don't know. I tweeted this out that, like, somebody, some intern is getting beaten in a lobby somewhere or in, like, an alley somewhere by executives. Because, like, I don't know how that happens. I don't know how much money Target lost because of that. I don't care because I got my Xbox One and my Forza Horizon 3, and I've been enjoying it. And so, yeah, the Xbox One, I mean, if people want my views on the Xbox One, here they are. Different. I don't think it's any worse or better so far from my experience than the PS4, just kind of different. And I wasn't expecting my experience to be that different from the PS4, but for some reason it feels different. Rare Replay, I've been playing a lot of, and I mean, I'm a very big fan of Jet Force Gemini, and Rare games. I never played Banjo-Kazooie, which is a weird thing to say if I say I'm a fan of Rare games, but I had Donkey Kong 64, and so I played a lot of that. And those are some of my favorite games, and so I've been playing a lot of Rare Replay, and I've been loving it. And this is the topic next week, but on next week we're gonna cover Rare games and what makes them great, because I'm playing them, and a lot of people talk about how N64 games haven't really aged well, and how like N64 had like not that many like great games and stuff like that. And I'm playing these games, I'm like, these games are excellent, and I think it's lost on people why a lot of these games are excellent. So I'm gonna talk about that with Ian, hopefully, if he's there, next week. And yeah, so I'm playing a lot of that. I'm playing a lot of Jet Force Gemini. I'm playing a lot of Conquer. Forza Horizon 3, I've also been playing a lot of, which is a game that I had no idea I'd be playing. If you told me 2 weeks ago that I was going to have Forza Horizon 3, I'd be like, you crazy. But yeah, I've been playing a lot of that. And that game is excellent. And this is from somebody who's not that into racing games. The last racing game I was really into was Burnout Paradise. My favorite racing game of all time is Burnout 3. And, like, the only racing games I've ever been into are, like, the Burnout games and kart racers. And so, like, I never really expected to get into Forza or anything like that. And I'm playing it right now, and I'm like, man, this game is great. And I didn't even realize it was, like, this almost Need for Speed kind of thing where you're just racing outside in the roads and you're traveling Australia and you're racing in the Outback. And I used to think it was, like, a professional, like, NASCAR thing. Apparently, like, Horizon is, like, where they're, like, we're going to open up the playground and do whatever. And so that game's really fun. One of the best looking games, if not the best looking game I've seen so far this generation. It feels great. I'm still getting adjusted to the triggers vibrating, and it feels really good in a racing game, and it's really cool, and it's like unexpected. And so like I break and the triggers vibrate, and I'm like, oh, that's crazy. That's crazy, fam. And so that's fun. The cars are cool. I just unlocked the Outback in the game, which is like a pretty cool area because
it's a restaurant, right?
The Outback, yeah, the steakhouse.
Yeah.
And so you get to drive around the steakhouse awesome. In these different kind of cars, and it's really fun. No, like the actual Australian Outback, it's really cool because like it opens up like a whole new almost area. Well, I mean, it is an area of the game, but a whole new level to where like the cars used in the Outback are completely different from the cars you use like in the city. And you're just like using these off-road like four-wheel drive vehicles and doing races on dirt roads and stuff, and that's pretty awesome. Also, Forza Horizon 3 is cool because it's very creative in the way it does its races. And so there was a race I did early on where you basically race a helicopter, and it's like one of the first races you'll do. You'll race a helicopter, which is something I did not see coming, and the helicopter is like carrying a car. And you have to like race it to the finish, and like at the finish, the helicopter kind of drops the car. It's flying, and you have to beat that car to the finish, which was really cool. And also race a train.
That's awesome.
And so like the game does really creative things with its races. And there's so many like cool, like if you're a car person, I think this game is definitely for you because it does cool things with like classic cars and stuff. To where there are these missions called I can't remember exactly what they're called, but basically they're dream missions to where you get to drive these cool classic cars, and the mission is basically like drift and get this many points by drifting, or drive stylishly and get this many points. And it's stuff like that where it's just like, hey, here, just have fun. And I think that stuff is really cool. And so this is the first time in a while I've been really into a racing game, and hopefully I'm making the next episode Wired, which is the video series, and hopefully it'll be on Forza Horizon 3, and I'm in the middle of writing it, and hopefully it turns out well so I can make that video, because I really want to cover on why I feel like Forza Horizon 3 is a great game, and mostly has to do with like the feeling of euphoria you get while playing the game. But that's mainly what I've been up to this week. Oh yeah, and Luke Cage, which we'll talk about later. But also, that's a great show, Luke Cage. And so that's what I've been up to this week. Raj, what have you been up to?
Yes. Other than being in absolute pain from getting my wisdom teeth out, and you know, all my friends making fun of me for talking about it so much. I've been playing a lot of Gears of War 3. Getting excited for Gears of War 4 because I'm going to buy an Xbox One. I'm probably going to settle with a refurbished one from GameStop because it's super cheap. And it's the older one, but whatever, it's fine. But I'm a huge Gears of War fan, like massive. But like I've never played a Judgment, of course. Like no one played Judgment. but I never played 3 for some reason. And the reason why is because I played 2 and I thought it was fantastic. Then something about 3, when I was watching it in on TV commercials, like when I was a little younger, just never appealed to me. Something about it just never like appealed to me. And now that Gears of War 4 is coming out, it looks exactly what I want. It feels like it's going back to Gears of War 1's more horror-type roots a little bit more of the atmosphere. I was like, you know, I need to finish 3. I need to figure out what happened to this crew so I can go into 4 without feeling like I missed something. And Gears of War 3 is fantastic. Like Alex O'Neill told me, like, he's like, that's the best one. Like, that's, in my opinion, the best one. And, like, the more I play it, I think I agree. Like, it's such a fantastic, first of all, gameplay. Like, it's just masterful third person combat, and just the shooting and cover system is just at its prime, and the way that they integrate all these different enemies, the Lambit and the Locust, so beautifully, and I just think that's fantastic. But my favorite part of the game is the story progression, and the story progression especially of the Locust and the crew. Like, everyone in this game feels like savagery. Like, it's all just, everyone is just been on the ship for years. Like, the Locusts have just kind of resurfaced, but they're like literally they're called savage Locusts. Like, they just built like a town, and they're using all these horrible weapons that they found on the ground. Like, everyone seems desperate in this game, and I think that's such a cool atmosphere that Gears of War has not necessarily played around with, even in one, a game that, you know, E-Day just happened, all these horrible things are happening, you didn't feel necessarily that sense of everyone is like going crazy, you had all these weapons, you kind of felt a little bit more controlled than 3, where everyone is just literally falling apart, and emotionally, physically, and I just think this game is fantastic. I need to finish it before I get 4, but the way a big character death happened, which I knew about, I'm not gonna spoil anything for anyone, but like, It was just really cool to see that this game has an awesome third game that I didn't really think about for some reason. I consider myself a big Gears fan, but for some reason I never finished Gears of War 3, and I'm making that right now, and I'm making that up right now. And I think the game's fantastic. Like, it's so good. And the new weapons, oh, I'm just so happy. I'm so excited.
What is it that people like absolutely love about Gears? Because I have Gears now. Like, I've always been a PlayStation person. And like, I played games like, I was gonna say Uncharted, but actually I hate on Uncharted all the time because I'm a bad person. But like,
I agree, you are a bad person.
Most people do but I have my reasons. But like, I look at a game like Gears, right, which I've never played, and I just see like a third person shooter, a third person cover shooter. And I'm not sure like what the draw is, and I even have like Gears Ultimate. I've touched it for like 10 minutes, and I'm still gonna go back to it. But it's just I have so many games that I'm not able to like spend time with it yet. What is it that like pulls people into Gears specifically?
So I think like the first one was really like a revelation in terms of gaming, in terms of not only third person gaming, but the cover system and the shooting. Like, that was all brand new. Like, the concept was such a cool concept back in the day, at least. Like, the first one, I think that with a lot of these games, especially like, I always talk about this because like I'm a new person. I'm 17 years old. I'm newish. Like, I all these games, like older games especially, like even NES, blah blah blah, you have to kind of put yourself in a mindset like, okay, this game is revolutionary at its time. It's not necessarily something new to me now, but it was revolutionary at this time. And that's something that I think Gears of War, especially in the beginning, was totally known for, that people loved it. And of course, people have done it to death now. People have copied that game over and over and over. But I think that in terms of what why Gears of War is still relevant now, people love it, is the fact that it is has this great lore to it. Like, even though it's super cheesy, it has this amazing lore to it, and it's kind of deep. Like, it's really kind of deep. Like, I don't expect it. Like, you don't want to expect it from just, looks like a generic, just a, like, white protagonist who's just shooting a gun, who's really muscular. Like, you don't expect any of that, but it is fairly deep. And I think that that's what attaches to people, but also the multiplayer and the horde mode, fantastic, which comes into Gears of War 2, which is just basically just a bunch of locusts coming to you in waves, unlimited. But it's so fun and fantastic, and it's addicting. The gameplay is just so smooth. I think that that's what really gets to people. The gameplay is just so smooth and able to pick it up, but also you're able to... You have to always be switching weapons. You can't just be using one gun. It's fairly... what's the word? I guess it's just fairly fun. It's just a fun, arcadey type thing, but also the lore is very good. I think that's it.
Nice.
And also the feeling is very... Especially, like, for one, which is very, like, I don't know. It just feels very horror, and I like that a lot.
I played the new one a little bit at PAX, and I played the Horde mode, and that was like pretty fun during that time. And yeah, it was one of those things of like it reminded me of playing those type of games for the first time on PS3.
Yeah,
like the co-op shooters and telling people what to do and all that stuff. Not in, like in the to the extent that you see in like an E3 press conference where it's like everybody's all professional, like, hey, do this. But in this extent of like, oh, somebody come pick me up, or somebody like I'm down, I need heals, or like come set this thing here, and all that stuff. And it brought me back of like, man, I miss this kind of game. And I think I want to say like one of the only games I played that was like that was like Lost Planet or something like that. But yeah, Gears did give me that feel. Playing Gears 4, is that the latest one?
Yes.
Yeah. That tells you how much I don't really pay attention to Xbox. But like playing Gears 4 Horde mode, I was like, man, yeah, I can see it. I can. This right here is fun. And it's the kind of fun that I feel like I haven't felt in a while playing video games. And so I'm excited for that to come out. I probably won't play it off the bat because I don't have the money to spend on it. But in the future, when I pick it up, I'm very excited to play. And I'm very excited to play the first Gears for the first time and see how it is. I'm sad because like. It's probably not. I don't know if actually. What's your opinion? Do you think it's aged well? The first Gears. Do you think I can play today and be satisfied?
I was playing it the other day. Yeah, I think it's aged pretty well. At least for me. Especially with the remaster with the Ultimate Edition. Yeah, I think it should be totally fine.
Awesome. Yeah. So I'm excited to go back and play that. And I'm guessing you've also watched Luke Cage this week.
Yes. Okay. Very much so.
So let's jump right into that. Let's jump into that because that's my topic. And so if you're new to OK Beast, our format, and I mean, we recently changed our format, so I'll go through real quick. We ask what we've been up to this week. We go into topics and we go into questions. And so as far as topics, my topic is I want to talk about Luke Cage and I want to talk about the Marvel Netflix universe in the cinematic universe, even if it gets to that. And I'm really sad that Ian isn't here because Ian had a lot to say. And I guess we'll talk about it with Ian next week. And we might do like spoilers next week. This week we'll do spoiler free. And when Ian's here, I guess we'll do spoilers since more time has passed. But right off the bat, what are your impressions on Luke Cage?
It was fantastic. I think I like Luke Cage way more than any other of the Netflix Marvel shows, even more than Daredevil, surprisingly. It's definitely way more than Jessica Jones. I was not a huge fan of Jessica Jones. I went on the record and people hate me for it, but I was not a huge fan of it because I feel like it lacked a distinct style, and also it lacked the storytelling was just not good. It was very played out and drawn out. But Luke Cage felt fresh, it felt new, and it had an identity, and it knew what it was. And that's what I loved about the show, and that's why I inevitably fell in love with it, and I recommend it to every single person I talk to. It's fantastic, and it gets really cheesy and out there, but also that's the identity of Luke Cage, the way that they created it. It has this cheesy aspect to it. It isn't the most serious thing in the world, but it also isn't the most overly comic booky thing in the world. Like, it has this realism to it. Real things are happening in it, things that are going on in real life society right now. So it is able to mix that very, very well. Sometimes it's a bit jarring, especially the finale.
Yeah, I haven't seen the finale character. Yet, and so I'm really excited. Oh, yeah, I'm on like episode 10. Gotcha. I'm close to it.
So, yeah. So there's some things that happen which are very like, okay, fun. But you know, they mention it though. They poke fun at the fact that this is really stupid sometimes. Like, so they do have this really great balance of, you know, realism and what is inevitably comic book things. Hmm. And I just think the show is just really great in terms of also bringing in some characters that, you know, didn't even have that much depth in, like, older, like, Claire. Like, she didn't really necessarily have all that depth in Daredevil. She was there. She was just kind of there occasionally. But, like, she becomes, like, a character that I cared about, like, fully in the show. So I think that Luke Cage does a great job of taking characters and making necessarily, like, some characters that, like, the idea of them I wouldn't necessarily enjoy if it wasn't at Luke Cage. Like, I feel like Cottonmouth and Mariah and, like, these characters, like, if they exist in, like, there were, like, certain type characters, like, Jessica Jones that, like, these type of characters that exist, mm-hmm. but I never really gave a crap until Luke Cage where they have a really great system of making you care about them and characterization. It has some problems with flashbacks. I feel like that's a big problem with the show. Like, in terms of they bring flashbacks way too late. Like, they just, mm-hmm. like, kind of bring in a flashback, and it's like, oh, now you have to care about it. Things are happening, like, right that moment. Like, there's no, like, leading up to it. But other than that, like, I think that the show is fantastic, and its use of hip-hop and jazz and black culture is fantastic. It's so good, and it all feels very natural, and I love Mike Coulter as Luke Cage way more than I ever did. He made no impression on me in Jessica Jones, but I think he's perfect right now. Like, I'm very excited for Defenders right now.
Yeah. I think the show did a great job of developing Luke Cage a lot more than mm-hmm. they did in Jessica Jones.
Yes.
My impressions of Luke Cage, like, going into Luke Cage, mm-hmm. weeks before, even months before, I texted Ian. I had, like, a conversation with Ian months ago about Luke Cage and about how I'm not excited for Luke Cage because I felt like he'll fall into kind of the same thing as Superman of, like, he's kind of bland, mm-hmm. kind of, like, too ideal, kind of, like, too perfect, and I think that leads to a boring character. And nothing about Luke Cage really struck me as unique or exciting. Mm-hmm. I think the show did a good job of fleshing him out a little bit more. I still have issues with him because I still feel like he is a bit, like, you said, corny, and I think I think he is pretty kind of corny at times. Yes. I like the fact that he doesn't cuss.
I thought
that was cool. One, because it kind of like I can relate to that because I don't cuss much, and so, like, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, cool, he's making me cool. That's awesome. But, like, I did feel like at parts he was a little bit, like, his delivery of his lines, I felt, were kind of not on point a bit. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of took me out a little bit. I mean, here's the thing. I'm about to, like, list a bunch of complaints about the show, but I want people to know off the bat, I love the show. I think the show is amazing. But, like, even the way it handled, like, the black culture stuff, I thought it was a cool attempt. I don't know if the attempt stuck for me personally, because a lot of stuff there felt a little bit forced, and a little bit, like, corny. Like, I was telling Ian this the other day, and I was kind of saying, like, some of the references they made were kind of felt like too convenient. Because there's one part where one of the black female officers, Misty, she's like, oh yeah, I remember back in the day listening to Shook Ones on the radio. And I was like, for real? Like, listening to Shook Ones on the radio? Like, that, it was a little bit too much for me of, like, I understand, like, you're trying to be black, which is great and stuff, right? These are black characters and this is a black show and stuff. I appreciate that. But if you're going to be a black show, I feel like you got to be a black show and not, like, try to be a black show. You feel me? Like, I grew up watching, like, Tyler Perry and, like, BET, and I mean, there's a lot of issues I can put out there as far as, like, BET and stuff, but, like, I watch shows that were, like, black, like Fresh Prince and stuff. Like, I watch shows that were black, and I feel like watching Luke Cage is almost making a show like there hasn't been a black show before. And that's how like its delivery kind of came off to me. And now I do love a lot of stuff it did with hip hop specifically. Like if I took if I kind of separated like it trying to be black with it being an homage to hip hop culture, that stuff I appreciate a little bit more. And I appreciate the music stuff it did, and I appreciate like how episode 3 or 4, I can't remember which one, opened up with Jidenna, and he was rapping and performing. And I appreciate the Biggie poster that the dude had on his wall. All that stuff, I was like, man, that stuff is dope. That stuff is awesome, and I really appreciate that stuff in the show. But the show specifically, like, trying to be, like, a black show, I felt like it didn't succeed. I don't know if that's because... I don't know how the writing staff looks on the show. I don't know if the writing staff is mostly white. I assume it is because I'm assuming it's the same writing staff from Jessica Daredevil, or at least a very similar-looking one, since those universes have to intertwine and stuff. And I get all that, and so I kind of excuse it for that because I get it. It's hard, especially like if your writing staff is white, and I assume they have some black people on there. Hopefully, if they don't, then that's an issue. But if the writing staff is like mostly or mainly white, then it's hard. And it's hard, especially like if you're trying to make a show that looks like or that's trying to follow in the footsteps of something like Martin or Fresh Prince. Those are sitcoms, but like, or even like something that follows in the footsteps of a Tyler Perry show or a BET show or something that is trying to be a black show. It's difficult. And it's difficult because the real thing is out there, and I can go and watch something that is a black show and it doesn't feel like it's not being genuine. But watching watching Luke Cage, it felt like, man, I'm watching it more as like just like a Netflix show, or just like any other show with like a lot of hip hop homages, than like a black show, because it didn't really feel like a black show to me. It felt like it was trying to be a black show. And so that was kind of a long rant on that. But I'm on episode 10 right now. So far, I think everything's great. The villain, great. There's another character that I don't want to mention because spoilers, but like, I'll just say the villain, great. The flashback stuff, I think I agree with you. Origins are always hard, and so like, I'll just leave it at that. I agree with you on that stuff.
It's just that they introduce it like way too late. It's just like they introduce it and it's like, oh, now it's relevant, like right now, like the scene you're watching. Like, it's just like, that's the thing about like Daredevil or whatever. When they introduced the backstory of Wilson Fisk, like it was just something that added to the character. It didn't necessarily have to be relevant at that moment. Like, it wasn't like his father came back from the dead or something like that. Like, it was just something that added to the character. These things are just adding to the character, but they're also like directly impacting the story and what's happening right now, and it just felt a little like, feels a little late, you know what I mean? Like, there should I feel like if those flashbacks happen like one contained episode, and like with like different things happening like early in their season, and then they like brought them in, I think that would be an easy fix. But like, I guess they didn't have enough time or room to do that, so
I don't know. I will say though, like, what was in the flashbacks though, specifically in the one flashback episode for Luke Cage, where it was mostly that episode, I think I liked what was in the flashbacks, and I liked kind of the places they went with it, and the details of it, because I thought that stuff was actually like pretty interesting. But the fact that it's almost like you're taking me out of something that I'm in right now in the moment. Like, right now I'm into what's happening with Luke Cage present, and you're taking me out of the present and you're putting me in the past, and that's kind of jarring for me because I'm invested on what's in the present. I'm not really invested in what's in the past, especially for a moment that's kind of vital in the present. And with these Netflix shows, almost like any moment in these shows is kind of vital at that moment, because they're written very well. And so when they take you out of that moment, it's almost like, man, I know this stuff that you're doing over here, it's interesting, it's cool, I guess it's necessary and stuff, but I'm more invested on what's going on over here in the present. And so like, I don't know, that stuff, what was in there, I liked. But yeah, it could have been maybe implemented a little bit better. One of the villains' backstories I really liked. I mean, it wasn't really a backstory, it was a flashback. But like, some of the stuff in that flashback, specifically like the violent stuff in the flashback, it was dope. And yeah, I can't really speak too much about it, because I haven't finished it. And so my verdict will be out there once I do finish it. Comparing it to the rest of the Marvel Netflix universe and Marvel Cinematic Universe, I had this conversation with Ian, and I feel like I have this conversation with many people. I really like Jessica Jones, and I think that's mm-hmm. still like my favorite. And like I think that's just because I really like Jessica Jones as a character, and a lot of people don't mm-hmm. like Jessica Jones as a character. And yeah, I wonder about that. How do you feel about Jessica Jones?
No, like, I love her as a character. Like, that's, I was so excited for the show coming into it, because I like her, the idea of her as a character is like fantastic. It's like, it's awesome, especially for Defenders and like gritty Netflix show. But then the way that they handled it was just, for me, like, the like, yeah, that villain was just way too drawn out. And that's why I love Luke Cage. Like, no spoilers, of course, for Luke Cage. But, like, they have I think they're pretty good about mixing up with who the villains are and what's happening. But, like, Jessica Jones was just all about, like, this cat and mouse chase that just felt so repetitive. Like oh, he's in the, like, oh, we got him. Oh, we don't got him. Oh, we got him. Oh, we don't got him. Oh, mm-hmm. this guy, he hypnotized this guy. Oh, no, he's bad for a little bit. Oh, no, he's not bad now. Oh, like that happened, like, 10 times during the show. Like, that was the thing that really took me out of it, was the fact that it was just so, like, you can see, literally, like, see the way that they wrote the show and just, like, how they repeated things, like, every other episode. Mm-hmm. And it, like, I think that if the show was condensed more and they were able to have some courage to not have the same villain the entire season, or do something different later on, or, you know, not do the same, like, motif, I think it would have been a better show for me. But the things that they dealt with in terms of, you know, rape and all that stuff, I think was handled very great. Alcoholism was, like, homelessness, like, I think those things were really great, the way that they portrayed it and the way that they kind of presented it in Jessica Jones' case. But, you know, I just couldn't get over the whole tropes that they use with the villain, which really kind of pissed me off a little bit. That was the thing that just really got to me.
Yeah, I think that's a very legitimate kind of critique. Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, that's a very good point. Actually, I haven't heard. I think Ian might have been driving at that in my conversation with him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's a very good point. I love Jessica Jones for the reason actually that you said, as far as what it covers. I really like Jessica Jones as a character. I feel like so far I like her more than Luke Cage and Daredevil. I can't remember his actual name. Trevor. No, that's his friend. Is it?
Murdoch.
Trevor Murdoch. Is that Daredevil's name?
Matt Murdoch.
Matt Murdoch. Trevor Murdoch is a wrestler. Yeah, yeah. Trevor Murdoch is, that's hilarious. And he's not even like a good wrestler either. He's not even a relevant wrestler. He's like, he was on a tag team. Okay, so Matt Murdoch. Yeah, I like Jessica Jones better than Matt Murdoch. That's hilarious that, like, that that's how that came up in my mind. The brain is a mysterious thing. but yeah, her as a character I really liked. I think I identify with her a lot, which is why I liked it a lot. And I also really liked the villain in Jessica Jones. I thought his power was really cool. And I feel like, to your point, like, yeah, like, they kind of did take it and, like, kind of stretch it out across the season. Meanwhile, like, Luke Cage was a lot more succinct with their villain, but, like, I feel like with Jessica Jones's villain, what's his name? Killjoy? No, not Killjoy. Killgrave. Mm-hmm. I feel like with Killgrave, his superpower, I feel like they took it and they kind of took it in every direction they could. And they with a power like that, to where, like, his power is almost like you can form it into like a moral riddle or something like that. It's one of those things of like, if somebody really did have this power to have mind control or tell somebody whatever they want, they do it, how many ways could it permeate? What can we do with this? How can we experiment with this? And I thought that idea of a villain was really great. And I thought, as far as like pushing it to like every limit they could, I thought they did a good job with that. Which also could lead to your complaint of them stretching it out too much. But yeah, for me, Jessica Jones still above Luke Cage so far. So far, Luke Cage, though, is killing it with the violence. Like, the violence mm-hmm. in Luke Cage, I feel like, was very unexpected. And a lot of times it comes out of nowhere, and it's kind of like, when it happens, you're kind of like, oh, wow, like, that was kind of crazy. And it's awesome because Luke Cage is a show that I feel like is very controlled and very, like, it's not violent just to be violent. Daredevil's a lot of violence because Punisher was in it in the second season, and so of course it's gonna have a lot of violence. Even season one, like this fighting. Luke Cage,
that guy that just threw his head through a spike,
it was very gratuitous in Daredevil. And I mean, not even in a bad way, but that's just what the show is. Luke Cage though just feels more controlled, and it feels more like, yeah, we got violence, we got hardcore violence, and you're gonna enjoy the violence we got, but we also have like a story, we also have characters, we also have relationships that are going on, and we're gonna make you invested in these characters and what's going on between them. And I thought that stuff is handled very well in Luke Cage. And so yeah, overall, I mean, we'll give you more of our impressions next week, and hopefully Ian will be here so we can go into more spoiler territory, and we'll make sure to warn you guys when we get into spoiler territory next week. But let's move on to the next topic, which is yours, Roger.
Yes. So you're not a huge Gears of War fan at all, but I just think that it's cool that they're making a movie about it. They're actually making a Gears of War movie, which they were supposed to do a while ago, but it just didn't happen because, you know, you see this every other day where studios are like, we're making a movie, and it just never comes out, like Watch Dogs and Division and stuff like that. But I just want to say, I just want to ask, like, how can they make, or someone make, a movie like Gears of War, a third-person action movie a third-person action game that is basically very inspired by movies, a good movie that isn't generic. Like, that's just a very interesting conundrum. Like, you have a game that is so heavily inspired by action movies, and Gears of War is the equivalent of an action movie in a video game format, very much so. But then if you maybe put it to the screen, it kind of feels maybe generic a little bit in terms of what it is, because it's just like an action movie. Like Hitman, like even Hitman is a very unique thing. They just made it into an action movie. Mm-hmm. So I just want to ask maybe how can someone make a movie that is takes this third person action thing and makes it into something special for the big screen.
Dude, that's a good question, because I have no idea. I feel like with the Uncharted movie, I don't even know if they're still making that actually, but
yeah, apparently they are.
I feel like movies are hard to make video games are hard to make into movies, and even vice versa, but specifically video games are hard to make into movies because video games are 12 hours long, 20 hours long, 50 hours long, 100 hours long, and movies are 2 hours long. And so, like, you're taking this longer form of media and trying to condense it in a way that it's not supposed to be really digested, or the way it wasn't originally imagined to be digested. And even, like, in the reverse way, like, video games often don't even have, like, 2 hours of story, right? Like a video game might be 10 hours, but, like, 30 minutes might be like story and cutscene, and like the rest might just be gameplay. Like The Witness,
I played Gears of War.
Yeah, The Witness I played for 20 hours, but there's zero story in The Witness. I mean, there's kind of a story in The Witness, but like nobody knows what it is, and like it's difficult because video games aren't really meant to be movies, and I think there's a way, because comic books aren't really meant to be movies, but they're successfully made into movies. I just think more care needs to be put into video games. I'm not sure what the answer is though. With something like Assassin's Creed is coming out as a movie soon, which I assume is probably gonna be a bad movie, but
really
I think so.
I think it's gonna be all right, like a solid maybe 7, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, what gives you the impression it's gonna be all right?
Just the fact that first things first, I think like that Ubisoft is pretty involved with it. And even though they're not known for the greatest story in terms of Assassin's Creed, the thing that like turned me to it, other than of course Kanye being in the trailer, Kanye's "I Am a God," which is highly out of place for some reason. I don't know why, weird song to pick.
Yeah.
Yes. For sure.
Should have went Black Skinhead.
Yeah, they should. Honestly. The fact that for some flashbacks are all in Spanish with subtitles. Like, something about that, like, just seems, like, kind of genuine, the way that they're trying to portray this and the way they're trying to go about this. It doesn't seem like it's just a forced, you know, cruddy movie that Assassin's Creed. Like, it just seems to be a little bit more genuine. And even though, I was going to say Michael Fassbender's in it, apparently the X-Men Apocalypse was not good at all. And Michael Fassbender's in it. But Michael Fassbender is a fantastic actor, so that's the thing that I think I'm very excited about. So yeah.
I think a lot of video game movies look at other movies and try to copy what they do, which I think is a huge problem. Like, if you look at the... I didn't watch the Need for Speed movie, but I assume it was Fast and Furious.
Like, yeah, that's what it's
because like Need for Speed as a game is basically Fast and Furious. Or if you look at Uncharted, the reason why I'm worried about an Uncharted movie is because it is Indiana Jones. Like, if you reboot Indiana Jones, it's Uncharted. And like a lot of movies or a lot of video games get inspired by movies. I don't know if I said that right, but you know what I mean. Yeah. And like it's difficult because there is movies did come before video games. Like, movies were created 100 years ago. I don't know the exact time. And video games are fairly relatively new medium, and so like you do see a lot of video games being inspired by movies, and you don't really know how do I make a game about something that's inspired by a movie. Like, the one game I think that could do it is Last of Us, because I feel like Last of Us has such a focus on story and such a focus on characters specifically that it might be able to translate that into a film. Like,
I agree.
Yeah. I feel like if there is a good focus on characters and just taking it and looking at characters specifically and taking that first and then putting that into a movie and trying to develop those characters, it could work out. Because the reason why a lot of these movies are kind of bad are because the characters are paper thin and you don't really care about them. Firewatch is becoming a movie soon, which I think is going to be interesting.
Which is weird.
Yeah, it's a very weird choice.
I did not expect that.
Out of nowhere. Yeah. But I also think that's a game that could do it, because that is about that. Well, one's a unique premise, because it's all about this guy and a girl on the radio. And I haven't played Firewatch, so if I'm
misrepresenting, is it live action?
I don't know.
Is it? Because if it was an animated movie, that'd be amazing. But
that'd be awesome.
Live action.
And that's what I want.
It's very weird.
Here's the movie I want. And I've never heard anybody say this, and so I'm probably alone. The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess animated movie, animated by Pixar, whoever can do it well.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be a great movie. And I was playing that game.
I've seen this like a million times on Reddit.
Yeah. I was playing that game, and I was like, I got to the ending of that game, and I was like, this would make a great Pixar film or a great animated movie. Like, because so it's funny because when you first brought up this topic, I had nothing to say. Now I have everything to say that I don't even know what to say. Movies need to be more experimental. And can you imagine a movie with a silent main character? A movie with a main character that doesn't talk the whole time. It'd be very difficult, but I think if pulled off, it could be historic. It could be amazing. Yeah. And if you make a Legend of Zelda movie where like Link doesn't talk the whole time, and you get like Midna being like crazy, like, because Midna in Twilight Princess, Midna is like with Link the whole time. Midna is like this like spirit kind of thing. I don't know how to explain her. And she's with Link the whole time. And if you could have Midna there like the whole time, just being kind of the conduit for speech and kind of just acting a fool the whole time, and then like all these things happening in Hyrule, I think that could be make an amazing movie. Because Twilight Princess does have an art direction that's like dark in a, like a cute way, in a way that's kid friendly, but in a way that still I feel like for adults could still feel like, oh man, this is pretty dark. I feel like that could make a cool movie. But I think first and foremost people need to be experimental with it and be different and not try to take a game and make it into like whatever action movie you can make it. Like, try to like approach it from a different perspective. That's why I'm excited for Firewatch, because Firewatch, you can't just take Firewatch and make it into like what the Hitman movie is, or make it into like what the Tomb Raider movie is, or what the Resident Evil movie is. You can't just take it and create like an action film. You have to be smarter and more considerate about the way you write dialogue and the way you make these characters interact. And in Firewatch, right, where like the protagonist doesn't see the other character in the game, like there's two characters in the game, one of them you don't see and you're talking to them the whole time, that could make for an amazing movie. But it just has to be done with consideration and have enough money thrown at it, probably. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you have any more thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I mean, I can do very specific things. I mean, they need to really focus on the characters, of course. I think the movie needs to be very gory, like extremely gory, because I think that's what Gears of War is known for. Mm-hmm. I mean, not gratuitous, like, gratuitous, but, like, I mean, like, more of just, like, people exploding, like, literally just exploding.
Do you think, like,
that's what
it's, I feel like it's weird, sorry to cut you off, but, like, the characters in Gears of War are pretty large and larger than life.
Yeah.
Do you think characters, like, actors could work, like, to kind of try and replicate that? Or do you think they just have to do, like, regular-sized dudes? Or, like, how do they fix that?
Yeah, I mean, they have to be, of course, like, huge dudes. I think, like, a Terry Crews type guy. Like, I mean, first of all, I think Terry Crews would be fantastic.
Terry Crews would be awesome.
He'd be awesome for he'd be awesome for a character named Cole. Which is
Terry Crews and The Rock.
Oh my God. Oh, The Rock. Oh my God. Exciting.
Yeah, never mind. That's problem only two fixed.
People. Yeah, yeah. No, but like they also have really huge suits. So that could be interesting. I think they can there's also going to be female cogs the soldiers in the movie. Mm-hmm. So I think there's going to be able to be some mixture of body types, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So specifically for the, I think that needs to be gory. I think that, honestly, if the Gears of War movie wanted to be, I think, very successful, I think it would have to be, I think for the first one at least, I think it would be awesome if it was a very dark film, shot very dark, and it was something that was a little scarier. Because that's the thing I love about Gears of War. People always forget, Gears of War 1 is a pretty, not necessarily scary game, but it's a very atmospheric game. And I think that if they were to bring that to film, that part of it necessarily, and not making it like more of like Gears of War 2, which is a little bit more open and brighter. I think that if they made this a darker film with more consequences and it looked like it was something that was a little bit scarier, I think that would be more interesting than just making something generic, like another random action movie that's set in space. Like, I think that that could really work. And if it was focused on characters, and I think you can totally do it, because these characters have very distinct personalities. And yeah, Terry Crews just made me very happy, because that's perfect. Like, have Terry Crews as Cole. Like, it, like, also, Cole in the video game is used to be a thrash ball player, which is basically football. And Terry Crews in real life was a football player. Like, it's, if you have these little things, like, just work on these characters and kind of focus on the backstory. Bring some things from Gears of War 3. Put them back into Gears of War 1, give some backstory to these characters, flush them out a bit more, and have it be a little cheesy, but also more less cheesy than the video game.
Yeah.
Because the video game gets real cheesy sometimes. I think there's a lot of things they can do right. I just feel like there's so many things they can do wrong.
Oh, yeah.
So it evens itself out, you know?
And
what
it's
mean?
Hard. It's hard with Gears of War, because Gears of War is action, and it is, like, people getting shooted and all that stuff. It's been confirmed, right, that they're making a Gears of War movie?
Yes, okay. Universal. It was on the live stream they did. Rob Ferguson, I think, said it.
I'm very interested to see how that turns out.
Yeah. I mean, Gears of War 4, the multiplayer has Run the Jewels as playable characters. So, I mean, they got to be in the movie now.
Oh, dude, that would be amazing. I would watch that movie just for the principle of it.
Oh, it'd be so good.
Yeah, dude. Oh, yeah. So good. The problem with...
They revealed today the character models for LP and Killer Mike and Gears of War 4, and oh god, that's the only character somebody be playing us. It's so good. It's so perfect. I love it.
Yeah. The issue of video game movies is real. And I'm interested to see what solves it. And if it's Gears of War that solves it, that'd be crazy. That'd be awesome. Because that is like I feel like that is like a game that would fall into that trap of like just make an action movie and call it Gears of War, but I'm very interested to see how that turns out. I Gears of War, specifically for how violent it is and how like how bigger than life it is and how over the top it is, I think could just in itself almost be like a parody of video game movies and be good in that way of like it knows what it is so much that it kind of leans into itself and then like kind of runs with it in a way that's better and actually good. I think that it could be awesome.
Yeah.
Let's go into questions because we have quite a few questions. Our first one is from the good friend who writes in every episode, and we love him for it because he has the best questions. Chase Williams at Bodacious Chase on Twitter. He says, "If you could go back in time a decade and show yourself one game from this year, which game would you choose?" Now I wish he wrote this question back in 2013, when Grand Theft Auto 5 came out. Because if I took Grand Theft Auto 5 and showed that to myself 10 years ago, I would lose my mind. I would be like, because here's the thing. When I was growing up, right, San Andreas is actually one of my favorite games. It's like my second favorite game. And like, growing up, San Andreas like was my favorite game, right? Like, I played it all the time. And I remember it being like, dude, San Andreas would be the perfect game if, one, it had better graphics, two, it had online multiplayer. And then they made that in 2013 and called it GTA 5. And man, if I showed myself that 10 years ago, I probably would have had an aneurysm or something. I would have like, I would have had a seizure and probably gone into the hospital, because that's, I mean, I still play GTA 5 and I'm still like, yeah, this is my perfect game. I mean, people hate on me sometimes for it because it is like that stereotypical, like, oh, of course you love GTA 5. But GTA 5 to me is literally like the perfect game for me. And yeah, I think it is one of like the best games ever made. And I don't think that's hyperbole. For some people, it probably is. But for me, I'm like, dude, this game is. It's
fantastic.
Yeah.
It's
perfect. You just throw money at something enough and it becomes great, and that's what GTA 5 is. It's just like billions of dollars. Yeah, I don't know if it was billions, but it was a lot of money. Could have been billions. Yeah, but
I was gonna say, like, if you threw Grand Theft Auto 5 at you or me or whatever, and like just play around, you're like, oh, this is amazing, like it's awesome, and you're like, press the down D-pad. And then just change to one of those people, and then just zooms out and goes to another person. Like, I would die. Like, I would actually like start crying. Like,
yeah,
that's crazy. I really, honestly, kind of wish like that wasn't like spoiled. Like, I don't, if that was like just like a rant, like a thing in the game that they didn't talk about.
Yeah,
and they focus on one character, like just Michael, and like, oh, this is Michael, blah blah blah. New game, here's gameplay with him, and they just put it on the game. And there's three characters in the game. That would have been the greatest surprise.
Yeah,
and they could have totally done it too.
They could have done
Michael
it.
Michael has so much. Yeah,
and I wish more. Colin Moriarty talks about this on Kind of Funny a lot, but I agree wholeheartedly with him that I wish developers would experiment more with announcing their game and with marketing their game and with like being bodacious and being experimental. No pun intended with bodacious, because Bodacious Chase wrote in, but like being like bold with the way they announce and release their game. Like, if Grand Theft Auto 5 all of a sudden, like, somebody came up on a live stream one time and was like, yo, Grand Theft Auto 6 is out, you can play it right now. And you like look at the PS Store and it's just there, and you had no idea what was in it. That would be that would be the craziest day in entertainment history.
I would cry.
But yeah, as far as a game that was released this year that I'll show myself a decade ago, man, I'd have to think on that, because I'm not. Oh, probably Ratchet and Clank. Ratchet and Clank, I'd show myself, because
that's a good one.
I think 2005.
That's a great one.
Yeah. I think I played the original Ratchet and Clank in like 2004 or 2005, and the new Ratchet and Clank is the exact same. And I was playing, and that was one of my complaints, but also one of my compliments for the new Ratchet and Clank, is that like, this game is literally like the exact same level layout, the exact same missions, the exact same objectives. Everything in the new Ratchet and Clank is the exact same, except it looks crazy beautiful. And I'd probably show myself that, because it's a perfect example of how far video games have come, and be like, hey, here's literally the same exact game with the same exact characters for the most part, and the same exact level layout for the most part. Except it's 2016, I think that's the one for me.
I think something like Overwatch, I'd show myself. Like, I would go back and I would show myself during when I was playing online shooters, and when I used to be a huge fan of Modern Warfare 2 and Team Fortress 2 and stuff like that. I would show them about, hey, this is the game. Like, this is the game in the future that everyone's going to be playing that's fantastic, and it's made by Blizzard. And, like, I think that's going to be the thing where I just think it's an awesome, first of all, beautiful game, but something that would just make me just so happy.
Yeah.
Happy to live another day.
I'd do that. That'd be crazy if you showed somebody 10 years ago Overwatch. If you showed it to me, I'd be like, who are these?
Blizzard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be like, how are these Pixar characters shooting each other? That's amazing.
Exactly. Exactly. That's so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Alex Van Aken.
I was going to say Gears of War, but.
Gears of War 4. Oh, that'd be yeah.
Especially as a kid, like, that'd been amazing. But also, we talked about Gears of War 4 enough, so.
Alex Van Aken asks, "What is Ye's best song, and why is it Streetlights?" Streetlights is it's Kanye's most underrated song. I think that is one of his best songs. I go back and listen to it, and I'm still like, man, this song is amazing. I remember listening to it for the first time and being straight up touched. And like, there's a joke I read somewhere that said like Streetlights inspired Drake's whole career. It kind of did. Like Streetlights is kind of like, man, what that's basically what Drake became, ended up being. But like, no, Streetlights is such a great song. And like, yeah, I have nothing else to say. But if you're asking me what I think Kanye's best song is apart from Streetlights, I just think that's one of. I think my answer, and might be an unpopular answer, but the one that comes to my head immediately is All of the Lights, because of how it was on My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, which to me is like basically like his penultimate album, like his magnum opus. Yeah. This is like his piece that he's putting out here to the world, and it's his greatest piece. And All the Lights is pretty much like the culmination of like his energy and hype and like everything kind of building up. And My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy is a maximalist album, which is like the opposite of like minimalist, meaning like when you look at minimalism. Minimalism means like less is more, right? It's an idea of art. It's kind of like what the producer 40, Drake's producer, kind of goes for, where he like there's a lot of emptiness in his beats, but that's because like that emptiness creates a better beat. Kind of goes the opposite way with it in My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy of more is more, and he kind of like stuffs so much into this album, into these 11 songs, instrument wise and production wise, and he creates like a grand experience, and All the Lights is the culmination of that. Of like, he has like 15 artists, whatever, on this song, and these trumpets, and these drums, everything coming together in a beautiful way. And like the trumpets sound like it sounds almost like it's trying to be a trap beat, but it also sounds like a beautiful orchestra at the same exact time. And the drums are just going off in a way that's just like so Kanye and so perfect, and so like at a speed that's so nice, and in the snare just sounds so perfect, and everything in this song is just like it's so grand and magnificent. That every time I listen to it, I get hype and I get excited for the moment. And so that's my answer.
That's a good choice. My favorite right now that I'm listening to like a million times is Freestyle 4. It's such a good song.
Yeah.
Tyler Creator's version of that is also fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
It's so good. The music video is great too. But my favorite is probably either Gorgeous or Family Business. I'm a big fan of the College Dropout. I think that's probably my favorite album of his, or Late Registration. It goes back and forth. But I think Gorgeous is probably the right answer for me. That is the first of all, the lyricism in this is fantastic.
Yeah. Gorgeous is amazing.
Absolutely, it's such a fantastic just lyrical Kanye song, which I very much miss sometimes. The old Kanye.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's just I just love that song. My friend who doesn't really like My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, he doesn't love that album or like it that much. But he was like saying, which I thought was very true. I mean, in terms of hit for him, I guess he's like, if that entire album was like the first like verse of Gorgeous, like he would die. And I was like, you're kind of right. Like, that's like a fantastic verse, and also the rest of the song is fantastic, well produced, Kid Cudi on it. Like, I just love that song to death, and just like Penitentiary Chances, The Devil Dances, like that. Like,
yeah,
man, I'm a big fan of lyricism.
Yeah,
I know. I'm a big fan of lyricism. That's why I love Kendrick Lamar more than any other artist. But like, man, that was just that song is so.
Are you a fan of Lupe Fiasco?
My friends keep on telling me to listen to him. I listened to a few songs and I was like, eh, and I just moved on. So I guess now I need to go back now, right?
Listen to specifically The Cool album. Like, his first two albums, listen to those.
Okay.
I'd say specifically The Cool, because The Cool is the first album I listened to of his, and he immediately became my favorite rapper for his lyricism. The Cool, Food and Liquor. I really like Tetsuo and Youth, but I feel like that one...
Yeah.
I feel like to really have that one grow on you, you have to, like, have, like, more of a history with him. And understand like kind of where he started from, and then listen to it, because I feel like I feel like for somebody who isn't into Lupe, listening to Tetsuo and Youth, it is kind of weird. His delivery, it might sound kind of off,
That's what it felt like to me when I listened to it for a little bit.
Yeah, his delivery is weird, though, and I feel like he's kind of lost it in terms of delivery. But I feel like you already have that build-up appreciation for him, and then going to Tetsuo One Youth, you might like it a lot more. But yeah, check out The Cool. And yeah, Gorgeous is dope. And I mean, since we're on this topic, I want to say, like, as far as lyrical Kanye, one of my favorite Kanye verses, not necessarily my favorite, but one of them is "Murder to Excellence" from Watch the Throne. I think that's one of like Kanye's best displays of lyricism. And yeah, I wanted to throw that out there for favorite. It's not necessarily my favorite song from Kanye, but it's like that. I feel like that's one of the songs where Kanye's like at his like best, just spitting, and it feels heartfelt and it feels real. And so, next question comes from Alex O'Neill. He asks, what aspect of being younger do you find is the most challenging limitation getting into the industry?
Not being able to go to events.
Ooh, that's good.
Like literally I couldn't go to the PlayStation Neo announcement or PlayStation 4 Pro because I wasn't 18. Which sucks. I went to the mall the other day with my girlfriend, and I couldn't play HTC Vive because I wasn't 18. Like, I couldn't try it out. Like it was just at the Microsoft store, and like, oh, you have to be 18 to play this. I'm like, really? Like, it's so, like, frustrating to me because, like, I understand it. I get it, right? But, like, it's just right in my grasp. And, like, I just – if I was just born a year earlier, it would just be – everything would be great. But like it's just all in my grasp, and it sucks. That's the biggest part for me, at least. I mean, everything else is pretty good, at least for me, because you know, I mean, in high school I've been able to chill out and do these things, and I have a little bit more time for everything. Like I don't really have much pressure, honestly, in terms of like being able to like, okay, well I have to do this every day. Like I you know what I mean? Like I don't have to like, I'm not necessarily like. I don't have to like drop out of high school or anything. Like I have time. Like I have to go to college for a little bit. I have to do these things. So I can take my time with YouTube. I can take my time with creating and finding myself. But other than that, just like, it's just literally the idea of me being 17 right now and not being 18 kills me.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm not as young as you, I'm 22. Mm-hmm. But if I were to answer this question, like for me, it'd be feeling like I have more time and feeling like, mm-hmm. I have all the time in the world to kind of achieve this dream, and so I can just take my time and right now I'm just gonna build what I have and not push myself too hard, because I feel like it does build complacency, I'm always like, yeah, once I get my site to the point where I feel like it's presentable and I feel like it's up to that level, then I'll apply, but yeah, I think for me the biggest issue for me is trying to like. Go harder in the moment, which I actually have been doing a lot lately. You're good. And just kind of like believing myself in the moment, believing the quality of my work, and believing that I'm doing good stuff and good enough stuff that I can put it out there. I don't even apply for freelance jobs, which I probably should.
You probably should.
Yeah. And so that's my answer. And our last question comes from Cameron Abbott, who asks, will either Blessing or Roger be on the far less successful Naughty Gamers podcast? Also, no Mafia 3 press copies. Cameron, to your first part, remember when I was playing Overwatch with you, Sean Pitts, a couple other people? This is months ago. And I was like, any of y'all want to come on my podcast, in my E3 podcast? And this is before I did the OKB's podcast. And I got no's across the board. And I expected no's from most people. But not you, Cameron. You said no. And that hurt. No, man, I'm just kidding. Anytime Cameron wants me on his podcast, I'll be on his podcast. Because Cameron's awesome. He's cool. I like his passion. I like how he talks. Are you familiar with Cameron?
I see him on Twitter, so I've never talked to him. So, yeah, anytime. I always like talking to people. I only talk on Twitter and then, you know, hearing their voices in real life. Well, through the internet. So, yeah, anytime.
As far as Mafia 3 press copies, so those haven't been sent out. And I think the game comes out, well, as of the time people are listening to this, because this podcast comes out on Monday. We're recording this on Thursday. The game releases on Friday. And no press copies were released before the game's release.
Yeah.
I don't know if it signifies.
Some reviewers are getting them now.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, Marty Sliva tweeted that he got him. He got one.
Yeah. Colin too, yeah.
So as far as how it speaks to the quality of the game, it is always like a weird thing when they don't get sent out of like, okay, well, are they not sent out because it's a bad game and they don't want to get bad reviews before it's out, or is it not sent out for some other reason? it's a weird thing. My assumption, because from seeing the game and also seeing tweets, I think Marty Sliva tweeted that like the game seems good so far. He said the writing and the narrative story stuff seems pretty good so far. And so, I mean, my assumption is they just didn't do it for some internal reason, just because they didn't want to. It doesn't seem like it's going to be a bad game to me. And we'll probably know by Monday. By the time you're listening to this, you'll probably know what reviewers think and all that stuff. But yeah, I don't think it means it's going to be bad by any means.
Yeah, I think the only thing that maybe could be a little bit iffy maybe is performance. That's the only thing that comes to my mind, because I feel like the game looks pretty solid, or always looked pretty solid, and I think that they wouldn't release a Mafia game that isn't solid, because it's just a weird franchise to just kind of rush out there. So I kind of have always had faith in this game, so I was always thinking, like, I mean, there's so many great examples of games that didn't get press copies but have been fantastic, like South Park. So yeah, I think that it evens itself out. I don't know that they're not obligated to send out press copies. They don't have to necessarily, but also it does speak a little bit of volume when a company doesn't send them out. So I understand the complaint, but I wasn't really too nervous about it, because I feel like I would just wait till Monday, make sure the game runs well, make sure it's not horrible, and you know, pick it up myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I really hope the game is good and it does well too. Because it is a game that like from pre-release I took interest in it. This and Watch Dogs, both because of their protagonists, both of them have like black protagonists, and more specifically, even Watch Dogs 2 didn't need to have a black protagonist. Like, that dude could have been white, but they still decided to make him black, which I thought was very cool, and very awesome. And Mafia 3, it plays into the narrative a bit more, but I still see that, and I still hope that the game is good, because I do want like black protagonists to represent and more diverse protagonists to represent, and I've talked about that in the past, and so people probably already know why. But yeah, like I the game might be bad, game might be good. I hope it's good. It's probably good judging from what we've seen so far, but also that's what we've seen so far is marketing footage and all that stuff, and so you never know.
I'm a big fan of Mafia 2, so I mean, I've been waiting for this game for a long time. Maybe I might show my past self Mafia 3, honestly. That's a good one. I've been a big fan of Mafia 2 ever since On Live was still a thing. I don't know if you remember that. I used to play Mafia 2 on On Live because I'm a horrible person. I just thought it was fantastic. So yeah, I'm very, very excited for that game, and hopefully it's good. Hopefully it gets dropped down to like $30 so I have time. So I have money to play it.
I agree. Well, Roger, thank you so much for joining me on the OKB's podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh yeah, dude, it's been awesome. Blast. I've needed to talk about Kanye for a while with somebody, and so this is great. Yes. This feels awesome.
Shout out to Real Friends too, by the way.
Oh yeah.
Shout out also to Welcome to Heartbreak, which is the Real Friends before Real Friends.
I was listening to that song. Like last month or a couple months ago, and I was like, man, this song, because originally like I liked the song and stuff, but it felt after a long while I was like, man, this song is a little bit corny in the way it presents stuff. But then I was listening to it again, I was like, man, this song touches on some real stuff. Like, it touches on vanity, it touches on like on material possessions and how they can't fulfill, like no matter how much money you have, like that's not gonna fill like the hole in your heart, and that's some basic life lesson for you right there.
For sure.
But yeah, I was like, man, that's dope.
The whole way that it just leads up to the Kanye just being like, "Welcome to Heartbreak," like it's just like gives me chills every time. Like, such a good way to enter the album.
Shout out to Say You Will, because the fact that the dude stops singing, like, I think that is the song where he stops singing like halfway, and the beat just keeps going for like another like 3 minutes or something like that. I hope that's the right song I have in my head. It's either that or Bad News.
I'm pretty
sure.
Which one.
But Say You Will, also he did like a remastered version of Say You Will recently.
Oh really?
Yeah. And I think it's on his SoundCloud. go to his SoundCloud and search for it. It's really good.
Awesome.
He only thing he did was redo the beat. And it sounds beautiful. If I can find it, I'll send it to you after this podcast.
Awesome.
But like, and also, have you seen that video about how Kanye kind of like how Kanye's process when it comes to vocals and it comes to like experimenting with vocals and all that stuff?
Box, right?
Yeah. I think they showed the Say You Will thing in their first split second. But it's a wonderful example of Kanye as an artist and all that stuff. But enough about Kanye. Remember that. Actually, before I get into the description of the podcast one more time, Roger, where can people find you?
RogerFormer.com, YouTube.com/RogerFormer, Twitter.com/RogerFormer, everything.com/RogerFormer. Hit me up, fam.
Awesome. And you can find me at Blessing Jr. on Twitter. That is at BlessingJR. You can find me also on OKBeast.com, OKBeast YouTube, and OKBeast. I don't know what else we have. I don't know. Our iTunes, I guess. I have a lot of podcasts too, so listen to all of them. Throne Watch, where we just did our Mos Def episode. The People, which we have another episode coming out on Wednesday. Make sure to check that one out. You can check out all our content on OKBeast.com. Check back regularly because we have stuff post almost every weekday, most weekdays at this point. But as a reminder, OKBeast is a brand dedicated to games, culture, and looking at how games fit within our culture. The OKBeast podcast is a gaming-centric show where a couple of friends come together and talk about what's going on in our world. If you like that, subscribe to us on your podcast service of choice, visit OKBeast.com, and follow at OKBeast Now on Twitter. This has been episode 12. Thank you so much for listening.